Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Tuesday, September 3rd, 2013, as we record this, just after 2 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with us again this week. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, guys.
And, you know, it is, of course, a holiday. It's, it's just ending up the end of Labor Day. My family here, every Labor Day, there's this thing called Bumbershoot that Seattle has. That's basically a three-day music festival over Labor Day weekend. So my wife and daughter go every single day. They usually drag me to go with them one of the days. And so I went yesterday. Sunday. I went on Sunday. And so we had the whole family there on Sunday. And
Do you just not enjoy these things?
I am not a fan of these things. Because I'll tell you, look, here's the thing. First of all, I'm not a fan of crowds. So, like, if this
Sam, I took Sam to a concert, if I remember correctly. He really wasn't into it.
No.
He just doesn't. Yeah.
If I remember right, it was a Roxette concert.
Yes, it was.
But, you know, look, here's the thing. Like, and specifically, you talk about concerts, and this is a music festival. So there's a whole bunch of concerts. You know, and there's some, you know, various places that you can walk in between, and then they've got like a big headliner in like a stadium in the evening and things like that. And, you know, so I went to one of the bigger ones. I guess they have a couple in the stadium over the course of the day. And look, my routine, I have never been to a pop music or a rock concert or anything like that, that I did not feel like it was so loud, it was painful.
Oh boy.
Okay? Like, I've been to like...
Well, that doesn't help.
I've been to like a few concerts of like, you know, folk or classical or something like that. That's entirely different story. But like for these kinds of concerts, you know, well, and I should accept those. I've been to a couple Moody Blues concerts. That Brandy really likes those. The volume wasn't crazy, but like here, I'll tell you what. I end up because I guess I'm really sensitive to this stuff because it really like bothers me. So I end up. I've now got it down. So I use earplugs, and then over the earplugs, I have a big ass set of those headphones like airplane mechanics wear. That like I ordered off the internet, and with both of those together, I can tolerate the volume.
Man, wow! Well, that's quite okie dokie. Well,
yeah. So anyway, so this is clearly not my thing. I don't like crowds. I don't like the loudness. I don't like
you to a club in South Beach is really out of the question. Is what you're saying the next time you come down here?
This is not something I would enjoy. Yeah, okay. These are the kinds of things that I would do. I would potentially get dragged along to these things, and I'd be like, "Okay, I'm doing it. I'm playing along.
Get me the fuck
out of here as fast as possible." You know. So anyway, they're there again today, and I've got Grandma helping out with Alex downstairs while they're doing their fun stuff elsewhere. And, you know, occasionally, I will be surprised, generally each year that I've gone to, I've found, like, one, like, band I like, and I can listen to them. As long as I'm an appropriate distance from them, that the volume doesn't bother me.
Okay.
And almost always then, when I go and, like, buy their album or something, I'm like, oh, this is so much better than they were live, because it's at a reasonable volume.
Oh, you crazy lunatic. Okay. All right. Well.
Anyway, so that's what's going on today here. And, oh, and my backup hard drive is failing.
Oh.
Which is always fun. So I'm like, ah, fuck. Do I have to mess around with it a little bit to see if I can fix it? Or do I just order a new one and be done?
I would just order a new one and be done.
And it's like, I'm looking at it. It is less than a year old. The drive in question.
Call the manufacturer warranty.
It probably is under warranty, but like it's such a pain in the ass to deal with that stuff. And
but just go online; you probably could put the request in there. I mean, I don't know. I've gone from some places; you just put the request in, they'll send you a box. You'll put the thing in, return it, they'll send you a new one.
I know, but it's more of a pain.
It's
than
free.
Just,
it's free.
That is true. Whereas, like, I mean, I could hit a button and have a new hard drive here tomorrow, but or maybe 2 days. But you know, I would be paying for it. It would be a new thing. But
versus free.
I know it's free. And either way, though, I have to, like, re-back up the data and blah, blah, blah. And it's my time machine volume, so I lose all the history. And I only get the current... You know, it's a pain in the ass.
I agree.
It's a pain in the ass. And, like, I'm looking at the drive. I actually started... When I get a new backup drive, I now date them. So I know I put this in place November 2012 was when this particular drive went online. So that's not very long. It's like... And I know it probably has a 2-year warranty, but anyway.
Probably.
And of course, I could spend time troubleshooting because there might be other things, like maybe the cable is bad, you know, that I use it to connect to the computer, or maybe something else, I don't know, whatever. So I don't know. Anyway, I'll work that out over the next couple of days. Nobody cares. We haven't a real agenda. Of course, this week has been full of stuff. The big story is Syria, of course. All kinds of developments on Syria since last we spoke. And there have been a few new NSA things, and there was a revelation about the DEA that came out in the last few days as well. Yvonne, do you want to start with the big one or end with the big one? How do you want to do this?
Start with a big one or end with the big one?
Yeah. Is Syria our grand finale, or do we start there?
Let's end there.
Okay. So, let's hit NSA first, because it's the ongoing story of the summer. There are a few developments here, but they're not really, really huge compared to things we've seen before. Here's a quick rundown. In the last week, there have been reports of NSA doing surveillance operations on Al Jazeera and Al Jazeera reporters. On the presidents of Mexico and Brazil, and contributing to the information on Kim.com in New Zealand. We also had, the Washington Post came out with the black budget that apparently also came from Snowden docs. As part of that release, there was also some additional information on the bin Laden raid and some additional information on the offensive cyber warfare operations that the CIA is doing. So not just defensive, but offensive operations. And then there's been increasing speculation of Snowden and Greenwald, etc., having lost control of the documents and having them more widespread than they were originally intended to be, and also some additional revelations of Miranda and what documents were taken from him when he was picked up in Heathrow, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, so there you go. There's all the stuff. Within those, Yvonne, where do you want to go first? So for the record, when we were talking about the plan for the show, Yvonne's comment on all the NSA stuff was, yeah, there was some stuff, but whatever. It was nothing
really
exciting.
The thing is that it's all overshadowed by Syria.
Yeah.
I mean, during the week. And a lot of the stuff was more revelation or more detail or more something or whatever. It wasn't like another big, you know, brouhaha. So I was just kind of like, yeah, sure.
Well,
we had offensive operations.
Let's start with Al Jazeera, Mexico, Brazil, Kim.com, etc. I think one of the interesting things here, like, okay, so let's start with Mexico and Brazil. We supposedly have intercepted actual communications from the presidents of both those countries, and they're protesting and doing things with ambassadors and stuff right now. But this is another place where the fundamental question comes up, you know, unlike, hey, we're listening to random Americans' phone calls. Okay, this is a spy agency spying on foreign governments.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What is the surprise here?
That's why I was like, okay,
And this goes back to the, you know, supposedly those reporting on these things are, you know, we're intending to be super careful and not do things that would harm and not do things that were not abuses. And so we're getting very close to the idea here. And I'm willing to debate this because I think there might be something to it, where basically any spying is by nature abusive is the only way that you can say that these kinds of things are abuses. Because, this is what spy agencies do. I mean, right. if they can get an inside tap of the discussions that are going on in the foreign ministry in Brazil on what they're going to do in the next negotiation, this is exactly what the spy agency exists for.
Right.
Because if we think the only legitimate thing is the things that you can read in the newspapers anyway, then there is no reason to have, you know,
a spy agency.
A spy agency. All you need is, you know, a subscription to all of the world's newspapers and a couple analysts to point out what they think is important.
Right.
And frankly, I don't, that might be wonderful. But, you know, again, it's sort of not reality. But the basics of this, the notion that even that kind of stuff is abusive, you have to have some additional assumptions beyond, hey, we're worrying about abuses against American civil liberty. One, which I actually tend to agree with, is that civil liberties are a universal thing. It doesn't matter what country you may be a citizen of. So that if we really care about civil liberties as a universal concept, then we should have the same rules against spying on someone in Guatemala as we do against spying on someone in Chicago. It mainly saying that you have to have some individualized reason to go after that person. And this is a viewpoint I am very sympathetic with, to be honest. And again, it may be very, very far from the reality of the world today, but I'm sympathetic with that viewpoint and think that striving towards it would not be a bad thing. But then there's also the notion that basically says, hey, if there's another government that's a quote-unquote friendly government, we shouldn't be doing any spying against that government.
Which I've heard that argument before, and that argument's never held water before. I mean, we've had friendly governments of ours spy on the U.S., and we've done the same. Now,
well, but so there's several ways to take this too, though. There's the pragmatic argument, which is where you've gone with this in the past, which is like, hey, everybody does this. This is normal. What do you expect? And then there's the argument where you start from an ethical point of view and say, you know, it doesn't matter that everybody else does it. It's wrong, and so therefore we shouldn't.
No, I mean, you can make that argument.
Even if it gives them an advantage.
You could make that argument, but I think that, I mean, you can make that argument, but you're putting your country at a significant disadvantage if that's what you're doing. I mean, it's one of those things. Look, I'm a guy who, for example, I'll give this analogy, okay? It's like Lance Armstrong, right? Well, you heard about him and the doping, okay? So the reality is that in that sport, everybody doped. Everybody. And I'm like, you know, so I mean, honestly, the only people that are disadvantaged are people who didn't dope. I was a guy that I said, screw it, let everybody dope. The hell with it. Who cares? Okay? Is there like, I mean, you know, they want to do it, whatever, let them do it. So here, it's an advantage.
You know, I've actually also, you know, and of course there was the old SNL skit on the drugged Olympics or whatever it was called.
Right.
But I've always thought, you know, look, these are ridiculous rules. Let everybody do whatever the hell they want to eat themselves. You know, that's what the people want to see anyway. They want to see the strongest, fastest, whatever.
Right.
And if that means that that guy's shooting up on all kinds of drugs that are going to kill them in 5 years, and that guy thinks it's worth
choice.
It, oh, well, you know, let them do it, and then we'll see where they go. But in order for that to be what we have, that's what the rules should say. The rules should say, screw it. Do whatever the hell you want. Have fun.
It's not like there's an international court of law that but you talk about the rules, right?
No, no, we're talking about the rules in each individual sport, and we're also talking about...
Right, but we're talking about the rules, like, between countries. I mean, let's face it, there is no international rule of law.
I was on to the sports stuff. Now, okay, back to the... There actually are international accords on spying, and there are no spy agreements between certain countries.
But it's an agreement. It's like me, you and me agreeing on something. It's not the same thing. You talk about rules. It's not like there's some rule, external rule, that goes and says, well, this is illegal, you can't do it. You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
And here's where I get back to sort of the notion of universal human rights. And I honestly think they're two separate real issues here. There's the dragnet kind of stuff where you're intercepting all communications going in and out of some country and picking and choosing what you want. And then there's the, you know, we're targeting the president of this country to try to eavesdrop on his communications. The one is very narrowly targeted and presumably has a specific goal in mind. The other is just, let's get everything. And I think the justifications for the let's get everything are much less sound. Now, even the spying on the president kind of stuff, I think that is something where, yes, it has been a historic norm to do it even with friendly countries. However, it's fundamentally, you know, it's fundamentally potentially self-destructive if discovered. I mean, we're having little dust-ups with the various European countries we were spying on.
Dust-up
with, you know, and I think it's not.
I think it's a lot of posturing. To be honest, it is a lot of posturing,
of course, because they do it too. But it's fundamentally not. You know, here's the thing, and this all comes back down to the notion of the double standard too. Like time after time after time, you hear things like, you know, if another country does it to us, it's a huge scandal, and oh my God, look what they were doing. But it's perfectly fine if we do it to them. And I think that's where you get into the bullshit. I do
understand that if another country, you know, that there is that double standard. I know.
By the way, just to be clear, I fully recognize that double standards are the norm in international relations and in all kinds of politics.
I don't have to like it. Obviously, you know, like, we take far more umbrage at somebody doing something to us than us doing it to them. Yeah. I mean, let's face it. Let's give you double standard. Let's talk about this whole drone bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Dude, if there was another country operating drones over U.S. territory killing terrorists,
Killing Americans they thought were bad.
Right. I mean, think about that. We'd be in war.
I mean, to be fair, you know, Pakistan and Yemen apparently gave us permission to do the drone strikes on their territory. And there were backroom deals on, okay, you can go kill your terrorist as long as you kill this guy that we don't like too.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. So it's not quite the same as, you know, random country doing drone strikes on the U.S. without our permission. It would be the U.S. saying to, let's say, Canada or Mexico.
But my point is, say we even did a backroom deal like that and it happened. I mean, the public would be outraged.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That whoever gave permission to that would be out on their ass.
Exactly. I mean, there would be huge public outrage, which is why. I don't know, especially
because if it's anything like ours, maybe they get the bad guy they were after, but in the process, they kill dozens of other random people who happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right. Exactly.
And I think this is not brain science, and I know it's like not. Again, I know it's not the reality of the world, but I think it's what we should strive for, is that we should be able to apply essentially the golden rule to these scenarios. If we don't want them doing it to us, we shouldn't be doing it to them.
Right.
But I think that's not quote-unquote realistic. I think that
one of the things about this is that if you've got your eyes open, you know you're spying on all these other places, and you're fully expecting them to try anything that they can or to spy on you. And I mean, if you do it that way, then you know.
Well, and I think counterintelligence stuff is fine. Defensive, like putting in place measures to make it harder for other people to spy on you. Hey, great. Putting in measures to make it harder for other people to spy on your people. great. You know, I think our government should be, you know, advocating full encryption for everybody. But of course, that's not exactly what they're doing. They're doing they're doing the opposite, you know, which is wanting back doors and everything so they can spy, which of course means there's back doors for anybody else too.
Right.
And so anyway, I think they're, you know, we do have to separate the spying on clear targets that it's like a duh. Of course they're spying on foreign diplomats and foreign government officials and things like that. Then the broad-based, hey, let's get all the traffic in and out of Brazil. But I frankly don't think either one is particularly the right thing to do, even if it does give us some advantage in certain situations. I don't think we should be in, you know, after every possible advantage. You know, it's not necessary, and it's not ethical, I don't think. And then just to move on, we've got Al Jazeera. Okay, so we're spying on journalists, and I understand these are journalists with contacts in the Arab world that might be incredibly useful to us. But still, it smells bad to be, you know, tapping phones in newsrooms.
It smells bad.
Yes. So, and then we got Kim.com, where we help New Zealand get information on him through the Five Eyes network of intelligence agencies. And he wasn't after anything even remotely terroristic. They were after him for copyright infringement. And really, like, okay, what is the standard here? Like, and this shows exactly the slippery slope that people are worried about, which is first you say, okay, we've got to do all this stuff because we got to protect against the terrorists. And then, oh, okay, but we're spying. It's, you know, it's what states do. We do that. But it's not after, you know, petty crime and stuff. Don't worry about that. It's just this international relations stuff. But okay, now we're going after this guy for copyright stuff. And we talked last week briefly about the NSA passing things on to local and national crime, you know, the FBI and local police offices, of things that they found to go after all kinds of petty crimes. And later on, we're going to talk about all the stuff that DEA is doing that's apparently more extensive than the NSA. And this shows exactly the slippery slope that people are worried about on this stuff, is that you may start out saying this is very narrowly targeted, this is for a very narrow purpose, but inevitably, once you've got the capabilities in place, people will be like, oh, well, then we should use it for this. Oh, we should use it for that. A similar thing, I've read a number of articles over the last year on SWAT teams, and how they're repeatedly have shown that once a police department gets a SWAT team, somehow, magically, the number of situations in which a SWAT team gets used increases dramatically. Because now they've got this team sitting around, they gotta have stuff for them to do.
Well, but yeah, but I mean, well, listen,
and basically, okay, the line slips so that at first it's supposed to be they only go into these highly dangerous scenarios, and right, they just find them using in more and more.
Well, but that's situations. What always happens with escalations and stuff.
And that's what I'm talking about in general. Look, once you have a capability in place, its use will grow. Duh.
Right.
That's the whole point there. And so, you know, You can't believe that once they've got this network in place to do all kinds of surveillance, that everybody in the world who thinks that that information might be useful for their particular thing isn't going to want to get a hold of it. And at first, the answer might be no, but then somebody will say, oh, well, but okay, this one, just this one time. But then once you've given them just this one time, then there's the next time and the next time. It'll become more and more common over time. And that's how the slippery slope works. And that's why, you know, it's important to draw the line on these things early rather than letting that happen.
Right. Well.
But we're not going that way.
Well, we're not going that way. So let's
take a quick break. Then a couple more things on this kind of stuff, and then we'll move on to Syria, I guess. We'll be back after this. Hello. Okay, so the one thing that's come up a few times over the last week, and we even alluded to it last week, I think, is that more and more of these stories are coming out that, you know, originally when the Snowden leaks came out, it was like, okay, these are very narrowly tailored. We won't do things that'll hurt the intelligence operation as a whole. We're only looking at abuses. And now we are seeing things coming from more and more papers. I think we've had something from like 8 different news agencies that are supposedly Snowden leaks at this point. So the question is, you know, are the Snowden files really as contained as they thought they were? Because Greenwald kept talking.
It sure as hell doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, because Greenwald kept talking about how, you know, they were very, very tight with their operational security, blah, blah, blah. But then one of the things that came out about Miranda is, you know, they had all these encrypted documents. And when they stopped him, apparently he also had a piece of paper in his pocket with the password to decrypt it.
Oh, that's really freaking helpful.
Or at least some of the documents. Maybe not all of them, but apparently some of them. Meanwhile, of course, Greenwald denies that he had such a password. But in the statements given when they were putting together the charges and explaining the investigation, et cetera, in Britain, this is part of what was sworn to, is that they, in fact, had gotten a password out of the piece of paper. They had decrypted some of the documents and some description of the kinds of documents there were, highly sensitive. Some of them including, for instance, names and locations of agents. Now, that's the kind of thing that has not come out yet. But you got to think, if given that these documents are appearing in new places, and it's like, wait a second, they aren't one of the ones that Snowden supposedly talked to. Snowden supposedly talked to the Greenwald, whatever her name is, Portia, the Portis, the documentary filmmaker, and the guy at the Washington Post. That's what we'd heard of originally. But now there are all these other places reporting on things that supposedly came from Snowden. You know, have these documents actually started to leak in full to a larger circle of people?
That's what it seems like.
It certainly seems that way. Now, there are a number of explanations that might also exist, but it certainly seems like these are starting to slip. And really, if their security was lax enough that the guy was carrying around a password to the encrypted documents, or even some of the encrypted documents,
which I can believe. I mean, I can really believe. Okay,
can believe it.
I've seen it happen already before.
I can even believe that he wasn't supposed to, but he did anyway because he was afraid he'd forget it, whatever.
Right.
You know, and it's like, oh, God, really? But but yeah, I got to believe at this point. It's like, to me, it's seeming more and more like it's only a matter of time till we just see all 50,000 documents or whatever, you know, just posted on the web somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
For everybody to see, no matter how sensitive, you know, regardless of what Snowden's original intent was, what Greenwald's original intent was, it seems like, you know,
it's spinning out of control.
Even if you only think, okay, the Guardian has said they're now sharing with the New York Times, and they're working with the New York Times on reporting on these documents. The Washington Post has it as well. It looks like the Independent in the UK has some. Leave out the Independent. Even if you only have the Guardian, the New York Times, and the Washington Post, you know, that's a bunch of people now.
Right.
And only one of them has to slip up in order to expose it even further. And you got to believe also at this point, given Snowden's contact with the WikiLeaks people, that, you know, some of the WikiLeaks people might have this too, and they're not known for their discretion on these kinds of things.
Right.
And then there was an article by Joshua Faust, and I'm not sure how much I believe this, but he put together an article basically listing a bunch of very circumstantial stuff, basically more than implying. He basically said flat out that he believes WikiLeaks has been infiltrated by the Russian security services, and that basically anything that goes to the to WikiLeaks ends up with the Russian security services.
That I can believe.
I can believe it too. I don't know that the case he laid out proves it, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility.
Yes.
You know, and so in that case, I don't know. It just looks like this stuff's getting all over the place. I would not be surprised to see the whole bunch of it out there at some point. Now, it's also possible that there is another source besides Snowden who has not been publicly identified yet.
That's also possible, too.
That is very possible. And, you know, this is a test of, Yvonne, you keep saying, well, if Snowden had just kept his mouth shut, then, you know, maybe something else is going on. And maybe there's a secondary source here, too. And apparently a couple of the reporters, I think even Greenwald at one point implied that there might be more than one leaker. So who knows? Maybe there's another guy who hasn't gotten caught yet and who hasn't been named.
Wouldn't be surprised.
You know, and frankly, a lot of these leaks probably, there are probably more people coming out as we go forward.
Well, think about it this way. Wouldn't you have the perfect cover for you? I mean, if you were somebody else that wanted to leak, you've got the perfect cover.
Yeah, no,
Snowden's
indeed.
Out there. What the hell?
Yeah,
screw it.
Snowden did it.
Right.
There's That's no reason it. To look for anybody else. Snowden did
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, Snowden did it. It's a perfect cover.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think there have been a number of cases where we've even seen already, like, when there's been coverage of these leaks, where not so much in Greenwald's coverage, but in some of the Washington Post coverage, where they've gotten, you know, anonymous people to confirm or elaborate on some of the things that they have said. And those are clearly other people that are leaking, some of which may be official leaking. In other words, they had permission, and other of which probably are not. And so, you know, this thing looks like it's continuing to spiral and maybe even, you know, spiral out of control, as they say, because I can see this, you know, there are a lot of things here that I find very interesting and that I may or may not approve of my government doing, as we were discussing in terms of the different types of spying that are out there. But it's certainly moving beyond simply, you know, hey, look, they have more of a view into what Americans are doing than maybe we've said before. And now it's hey, here's how we do our spying. And, you know, there have already been protests. Like, apparently one of the things that was revealed in one of those articles was that Snowden revealed how we had used cyber attacks to take control of networks at a Chinese university. The spin of that was, of course, ooh, that's bad. And yeah, I can see that. But now it's coming out that, well, it turns out that our infiltration of that university was how we eavesdropped on various trade negotiations with China. And that source has now gone dry. Now that it was revealed, they've taken extra security measures. They can't look at that anymore. And so now we've lost a significant point of leverage in negotiations with the Chinese. And again, that's where you come back to, well, you know, is that a legitimate, you know, okay, it was an advantage for it, but is it a legitimate advantage? Aren't we better off having an honest negotiation? But nevertheless, that's something where it actually has potentially weakened our diplomatic position in negotiations already.
Yeah, well, look, you bring in the Chinese into the equation. I'm sorry, but there's been a huge number of American companies that there have been a lot of reports that have basically pointed the finger at China as having infiltrated them.
Yep, yep.
I mean, infiltrated, not yep. just in the U.S. and Canada. So,
well, again,
I mean,
this,
Chinese have the reputation for being far, even far more aggressive than anything that you.
Well, right, this goes back to the question whether, you know, it's acceptable if somebody's attacking you. Is it acceptable to attack in kind with the same kind of attack as opposed to just double up on defense?
I think part of the defense is offense.
Well, that's the big question.
I mean,
my response is, okay, someone's doing all kinds of attacks into your system. I think the proper response is figure out how to harden your systems, not go out and attack them too.
No, I mean, if you go in to infiltrate them, I mean, I'm sure part of the information that we want to find out is we want to find out what they're
attacking us. Yes,
exactly.
Yes, yes, of course. But
I know you don't like that. I know you don't like that. I mean, but I have no problem with it. Okay.
So. Yeah. Okay. Let's And of course, the part of the list was offensive cyber operations, and basically what's been revealed is there is a ton of it, and right. that the U.S. government, primarily the CIA, apparently is spending huge amounts of resources doing cyber infiltration across the world of various sorts. In some cases, it's things like Stuxnet, where they're outright trying to sabotage things. You know, they were trying to sabotage the Iranian nuclear program. In other cases, it's just intelligence. And apparently, in a lot of cases, it's basically putting in the back doors. So even if they aren't actively using them right now, they have the back door in place so that they can go in there if they need to in the future.
Mm. Well, I'm reading over here, and I don't know if you saw this, but this is something The Economist in the UK where they're talking about, that apparently the NSA has figured out a number of ways to get around a lot of cryptography.
Yeah, tell me. I don't know if I've read this specific article.
Well, they're saying that most likely, and it says here, the most likely and least interesting answer is that the NSA has found a bug in the way specific programs implement cryptographic protocols. Such flaws are fairly common, can usually be fixed by simply patching the software. However, Mr. Clapper and Mr. Brumps suggest that the NSA's use of groundbreaking and breakthrough to describe NSA's advances could be read suggesting that something more fundamental would be at hand.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in here suggesting that, you know, we keep talking about it's encrypted, they'll never crack it, blah blah blah. Well,
so give the reference name of the article.
The article is in The Economist. It called The NSA's Crypto Breakthrough. Okay. And it's in The Economist, and they're talking specifically that apparently there's a lot of rumors that the NSA made some kind of like massive breakthrough in cracking cryptography.
And as you said, even aside from that, one of the things that was revealed in terms of the offensive cyber operations was that our government not only our government, of course, routinely is buying zero-day exploits on the gray market that's primarily in Europe. But there's this huge gray market of hackers that basically finds exploits in existing software and sells them to the highest bidder. And we're apparently buying tons of those.
Oh, boy, great. Oh, Jesus. That's genius. Okay, all right. Well, let's go to Syria. Come on. Okay, enough. Okay, all right.
We'll be back after this break, and we'll talk Syria the rest of the time. We'll be back after this.
Information.
Okay, we're back, and I saved that crypto breakthrough article to read later. Simply Googling on what Yvonne said got it. It was published September 2nd. Syria. So last time we talked about this, it looked like we were on an inevitable march to war. And I should be clear. I put war in quotes because the Obama administration was already telegraphing last week that they were talking about limited strikes, not, you know, full-fledged war. But like almost after, almost immediately after we recorded last week's show, this was brought up to Parliament in the UK, and Parliament said, yeah, no, we're not interested in going this way.
Right.
And then later in the week, after Kerry had gone on TV and presented the evidence that that was the Syrian government who responsible for the chemical weapons use, et cetera, et cetera. And that it was, in fact, chemical weapons and not something else. And Kerry came out and made a very strong case on, well, what people called a very strong case. I should say it's a very forceful case. It didn't convince me. But then Obama came out.
I wasn't convinced either, by the way, by the whole case.
There you go. And on the weekend, Obama said, you know, we're going to Congress after all.
Right.
And surprised everybody.
Everybody, including me.
Including me. I did not think that was the way he was going to go. Now, I'm happy.
I'm very happy, too.
I think that's a very good, you know, look, here's the thing. And of course, you've got a bunch of people saying, oh, my God, he's giving away, you know, executive function, blah, blah, blah. And I see this as.
Wait a minute. Wait, no. He's not giving away something. He's giving back something that a lot of the executives shouldn't have taken in the first place.
Bingo. And of course, there are a lot of people that think the executive should have full control over war-making power and that the constitutional prescription to Congress being able to declare war is only a legal formalism useful in a very limited situation, but it doesn't actually constrain the president at all in waging war as commander-in-chief. I obviously think that interpretation is bullshit. The other thing that's brought up repeatedly is the War Powers Resolution. This is also something where, which basically actually says that the president can go ahead and do whatever he wants, but then I believe it's a 60-day clock starts that has to get retroactive congressional approval within 60 days or the action has to cease, which actually within the War Powers Resolution, which no president ever has acknowledged as being constitutionally valid, by
correct.
The way, but within that, he could go ahead and bomb Libya all he wants as long as he's done within 60 days.
Right.
Without having any sort of congressional authorization. And, but frankly, I think that the War Powers Resolution is probably unconstitutional, but not because it restricts the president too much, but because it reduces the restriction on the president, because I believe the fundamental, actual, the only right interpretation of the congressional right to declare war, even though, and I will fully admit, precedent is against this going back to the 1790s. George Washington did offensive actions without Congress. So it's not like it's not like any president has ever respected my view on this. But, and precedent has held up the president's view on this time after time. But it seems to me the intent of having that there, the rational reason for having the Congress make that decision is only really valid if basically it means the president can't just go starting offensive actions and doing what are quote-unquote acts of war, even if they aren't a war, without Congress upfront saying, yes, this country would like to go to war with that country. Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, I remember saying when we have invaded Iraq, when we invaded Afghanistan after 9/11, if that wasn't a case where you actually should have had a declaration of war, where we were attacked and then we're going after them with a specific purpose of overthrowing the government there. If
right.
that doesn't have a declaration of war, then what the fuck does?
I know. That's what like still boggles my mind. I don't understand. We did what is it that Congress voted on instead of a declaration of war?
Authorization of military force.
My train is a board train in one race, and it's 19 cars.
19 cars?
Yeah, with
Three cabooses, 19 cars and three cabooses on his bullet train in his race downstairs.
Wow.
Now it's just in the train room.
It's in the train room now?
Yeah.
Okay,
It was 16, now it is 19.
Okay, well, I'm still talking to Yvonne. Okay, back to Grandma. Okay. After that little detour. Anyway, yeah, there was an authorization of military force, and basically all of this stuff, even going back to George Washington, like I said, is Congress, I think, abdicating its true responsibility, which is it should be making war and peace decisions. And so I think this is absolutely the right move by Obama, except, of course, Obama and Kerry and all these others have also said that, yeah, we think we would be better off if Congress approved, but we don't need Congress to approve. And if they say no, we'll probably do it anyway.
Well, that's not what I've heard the last hours, but I'm pretty sure that if Congress...
The truth here is if Congress says no, they will be very, very, in a very weak position if they want to go forward.
Correct.
They might want to, and Kerry and others have repeatedly said, we don't need this authorization, we don't need this authorization. Some other people in the administration have said, you know, basically, we're going to do this anyway, we'd like the congressional authorization, but we don't really need it. But if, in fact, Congress said no...
Yeah, I'm like, I don't see how they go forward with a straight face.
I'll tell you how they can. Congress said no in Libya. An authorization for military force in Libya just last year or 2 years ago, whenever it was, actually came to the Congress, and Congress did not pass it.
Daddy, please do give me some piece of paper. Please do give
this paper right there. Okay, yeah. Take the paper. But yeah, Congress failed to pass an authorization in Libya, and Obama went forward with it anyway.
But didn't we wind up doing it like in some...
What?
I thought that... Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll see what the heck happens with
this. We'll see what the heck happens, but I am hoping... Like, a bunch of people were posting, oh my God, this weakens presidential authority, and I'm like, good!
Yeah, I was like,
they were saying it as if it was a bad thing. I'm like, thrilled.
Right. I was like thrilled. I'm like, wow, damn it. Really? For real? For once?
And of course, other people are saying that, you know, this just shows how weak Obama is. And
I'm idiots. Got nothing to do with it. I think he made a calculation. He had everybody in his cabinet going gung-ho for this fucking thing. The reality is, this is one of the things that everybody's been railing about in terms of presidential power. And I think that he thought about it and he decided, you know what? If I'm going to have any leg to stand on this bullshit I've been talking about, we have to go to Congress and get presidential get approval and the discussion. And that's it. I mean, you know, I think he just decided to take a stand on the bullshit he'd been talking about.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see. I think this, you know, moving on to the next phase of this. Well, before we move on to what'll happen in Congress, I think there is something to be said for the Obama administration having royally screwed up this whole damn thing in Syria from the beginning. But the place where they screwed up is not in the last week. The place they screwed up is when they were all blustering about the red line in the first place a year ago.
No, that they screwed up. But I'll tell you this, okay? Listen, the worst way to royally screw this up is to actually go in and do something, because, you know, I think. It was one of the articles that I think you had posted on Twitter this week. We're talking about go through the outcomes of us doing anything right now. I mean, what the hell do we gain? If we go and we do a launch these bombs, are we helping anybody?
Well, here's the thing that when Kerry and even Obama came up, like all they're talking about is enforcing international norms and maintaining the credibility of the United States. Well, you wouldn't have a fucking credibility problem if you hadn't gone and promised things that you couldn't deliver on in the first place. So suck it up.
But like, okay, we did, and so what? I mean, like right now, the thing is attack is not going to help anybody in this conflict, period. Okay?
Yeah, I think there is... There's so much out there that makes a very credible case that, okay, let's do especially since Obama is telegraphing, you know, it's going to be very limited. We're only going to hit a few things. And they're basically telling the kinds of things that they're planning on hitting too. So there'll be plenty of time for them to evacuate those things, move things out of the way, whatever. So actually doing this hit is going to achieve absolutely nothing that isn't symbolic. Okay, symbolically. Okay, we hit them. But it, nothing will prevent him from using chemical weapons in the future. Nothing will remove him from office. Nothing will make his opposition any more democratic.
Maybe they telegraph all those things, and then they go and they drop a thermonuclear weapon in Damascus. You think that might cause some controversy?
I continue to believe that and certainly there are a bunch of people there. Like, apparently the opposition in Syria is upset at this delay. So there apparently are people in the region who want us there. But I can't see any way that our involvement actually
helps anything.
Makes less people die in the end.
Exactly.
There have been a number of studies that have shown, like, historically, if you go back and look at civil wars, and look at civil wars that have just played out on their own versus civil wars where third countries have gotten involved, more people die when the third parties get involved. Really? You know, because it fundamentally widens the conflict. It brings more resources into the conflict. Okay, so for instance, just at a very simple point, a few months ago, we agreed to give arms to the rebels, putting more weapons in there. What's that going to result in? More dead people.
More dead people. And then there was this Glenn Beck video. Well, actually, I had heard of this before. There's some general over there, whatever. Glenn Beck showed a video on his web TV show of somebody over there in Syria cutting a guy's internal organs out and eating them.
Okay. I have not seen this. I can't speak to its veracity, but...
I don't know if it's also true either. I do believe,
you know,
I'll tell you something.
It came from Glenn Beck, so I'm already not...
But I just,
it may be true, it may not be, but I'm not, you know, it doesn't give it any credibility that it came from Beck.
No, it doesn't. But I just thought that I'm like...
And this, frankly, it's the kind of thing that, look, with this kind of conflict, one of the givens is that every side of this conflict is committing atrocities. Every side of this conflict is killing civilians. Every side of this conflict is injuring civilians and in horrible, horrible ways. And okay, yes, and this ties to what we said last week too. Okay, he used chemical weapons. A bunch of people died. A bunch of people died in horrible ways. A bunch of people were injured in horrible ways. But guess what? When you throw a bomb in somewhere, when you shoot somebody, they die and are injured in horrible ways too. And one of the things that keeps pissing me off every time I hear it is when people talk about this, you know, the international norm against using chemical weapons. I'm like, fuck the international norm against chemical weapons. How about we come up with an international norm against, like, killing people?
Right. I mean, I'm like, you know, the Syrians are dropping cluster bombs. For example, I mean, anything in their arsenal. And now we're... You know, now, oh my God! You know, they killed a few thousand people with chemical weapons, and now we're outraged. Whereas all the other 90 some odd thousand people that got killed, who cares? They got killed with a bullet. Shit, we kill people with bullets every fucking minute over here in the U.S.
Well,
we don't
and frankly,
shit.
That's part of it too. I mean, if we were just going on numbers of people killed, we don't look all that innocent ourselves.
No, not particularly. No.
I mean, maybe we haven't killed 100,000 in the last 2 years, but, you know, we don't exactly have clean hands.
No, we don't. So, I don't know. Well, yeah.
So, let's take another break just to break things up a little bit, and then let's talk about what do we think will actually happen in Congress and what the ramifications may be. Back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, Congress. I haven't actually seen yet.
I don't think it's going to pass. Count. I don't think it's going to pass.
So here's the thing. My gut feeling is that it's going to be hard for this to pass because, you know, the polls on public sentiment show like less than 10% want us to do this.
Exactly.
Of the public. And at some point, your representatives in Congress are be like, they, you know, I'm getting all these phone calls from people saying, don't do this.
Don't do this.
On the other hand, you got a bunch of other dynamics in there, too. You got Republicans who don't want to agree to anything that Obama does. You've got other Republicans who are like, God damn it, let's kill Syria. You've got other Republicans who are like, you know, like the Rand Pauls who are like, we don't want to get involved in this kind of stuff. Then you've got Democrats who are like, we don't really like this idea, but we have to support our president. And then you've got other Democrats who are very anti-war and think this is a stupid idea. And I think some of the interesting stuff here is the fault lines once again, just like on that surveillance vote on the Amash Amendment a few weeks back, are not along partisan lines. You're going to have both parties split on this vote. And I think the president probably thinks he has the votes. Because if he didn't think he had the votes, there are some people who are conspiracy mouth. I've heard a couple things here. I've heard some people say the president knows he hasn't got the votes and he's using this as a way to back down while putting the blame on backing down on Congress.
I actually agree with that theory.
And then you've got other people saying that he probably thinks he has the votes. And if he doesn't have the votes, this will be the most serious defeat of a U.S. president on a foreign policy issue in many generations.
Bullshit. I'm going with A. I think he doesn't think he has the votes. And I think that's why he sent it to Congress.
And do you think he'll respect it if Congress says no? He'll be like, okay. He'll do like what Cameron did and say, public doesn't want this, stepping back.
I think so.
By the way, on the UK side, people are talking about how that was the biggest defeat of a prime minister on this kind of issue going back to the American Revolution, and that his prime ministership is severely weakened, and he may potentially have be out at
Obama's
some point.
Obama's not running again.
Cameron's not running again.
No, Obama's not running
again. Obama's not running again. True. So he may be like, fuck it, whatever. If the rest of my presidency, I'm severely weakened, oh, well, I'm a lame duck anyway.
Look, like you said before, he didn't get the vote in Libya, right?
And he did anyway.
But was the presidency severely weakened? No! I don't recall any of that talk.
Because he did it anyway. If he had said, Congress doesn't want me to, never
I
mind, think, it would be a different story.
What are the things
now,
that
again, let me repeat.
Foreign
if
policy,
the president was severely weakened, I think that's a good thing. Not because it's Obama, but because in general, I think the presidency needs to be weakened, regardless of who's in the office. But go ahead.
Foreign policy has a tendency to be a negative and not a positive, okay, for most presidents, in the sense that you fuck up something internationally, it's going to come bite you. You do something great internationally, nobody's going to give you a medal or re-elect. Nobody's going to give a fuck. My point is that if it doesn't go through and nothing happens, so we don't fuck up something, nobody's going to give a shit about it. I think, and the thing is that the polling that shows that 85% of Americans don't want this, I think that if Congress says no and Obama says, I'm respecting Congress's decision, I don't think it's going to severely weaken him. I really don't. I think it weakens him from the standpoint of like what people are talking about, that all of a sudden he's like going and like – I think just the fact that he went and he said it right now feeds what they're talking about in terms of him giving up presidential power.
Right.
I don't think that the actual vote
– Because already by the fact that he's saying – I'll wait for Congress as opposed to just going ahead. And this is what you have a lot of the neocon folks who support going into Syria, by the way. And we'll,
I know, they're like, all like, they're like, oh my God, they're like, rabid. I mean, McCain is like fucking foaming at the mouth to go in.
Yeah, well, he's foaming at the mouth going in, and he'll probably vote for this resolution to give the president authority, but at the same time, he's highly critical of the fact that the president asked for Congress's permission because he thinks the president should have just gone and done it.
Right.
And I think it'll actually be, you know, my initial gut feeling is that the mood of the public is that this will not pass, but Congress has been known to do things in the past that aren't exactly in line with the mood of the public either. And there are a lot of very interesting dynamics here, and there's going to be a lot of pressure from the administration. So I think it'll be very interesting to see where the votes lie here. And like I said, I think it'll be very interesting to see the splits in each party. Because, again, the fault lines here are not all the Republicans are going to vote one way and all the Democrats the other.
It's going to be – yeah, I mean, I do agree with what you just said. Seeing who goes for and who goes against is going to be quite amusing between both parties. I really do want to see how that breaks down.
The other interesting dynamic that started to happen here is the president provided a draft resolution – that was very, very broad. It did not give any constraints. It said basically he can do whatever he wants to control the proliferation of chemical weapons, and gave no time limits, gave no constraints on scope, gave nothing. It was basically a blank check. Of the sort, by the way, that the authorization for military force after 9/11 was, and people have criticized repeatedly after that. And one of the things that has already come from a bunch of congressional leaders on both sides of the fence is that that's a non-starter, that they're going to introduce an amendment that is much more constrained that they'll be voting on, that gives authorization in a much narrower way than what the president had proposed. So that's already interesting that the Congress is looking at it that way. But, you know, and a bunch of other people, by the way, I should say, are like, this is the last thing Congress wanted. Congress wanted nothing to do with this fucking decision.
Oh, I totally agree too. I totally agree that Congress wanted nothing to do with it. To them, they see it as a hot potato. That's why I think a number of them would have been like thrilled. Oh, he'll just let Obama do what the fuck he wants or whatever. All of a sudden, think about it. Obama, instead of like doing, you know, let's face it. What has Congress been doing the last few years? Jack shit, nothing. All of a sudden, you actually gave him something to do? Oh, you have to make a decision.
With some level of significance, too.
Right. You need to make a decision. Pass a vote.
And
figure it out.
And maybe this really is limited, and we're just throwing a couple cruise missiles in there, and then we're out. Or maybe it escalates. Because, like, look, all that has to happen is we throw a few cruise missiles into Syria, and Syria decides to retaliate by throwing some missiles into Israel, and kaboom!
Exactly. Then we're in a massive clusterfuck.
You know, and so now maybe they wouldn't do that. Maybe that's self-destructive, but you never know. Like, it's a volatile situation. All kinds
like,
of things
like Saddam was launching Scuds.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
Yeah. No, so it will be very interesting to watch over the next couple of weeks. But yeah, Congress, like, you know, Congress, frankly, the second any of this was coming up, should have been like, we're coming back from vacation, we're going to start talking about this. Ah, hell no. Even now, they're not coming back from vacation early. They're like, no. We're back on September 9th. We'll talk about it then.
Well.
And meanwhile, in the middle of all this mess, we're not going to talk about it today, but then this has got all this budget and debt ceiling crap to do later in the month, too. So, you know, whatever.
Maybe they could get a little warm up to a vote. You know, at least, you know, voting and actually something.
Maybe. So, anyway, we're going in circles now. It'll be interesting to watch what happens. Well, let's let it play out. I am the whatever Congress does, by the way, and what positions people take has implications for the 2014 congressional elections and the 2016 presidential elections, especially on the Republican side, because a lot of the potential Republican candidates are in Congress. Not all of them, but a bunch of them are. And you know people are going to ask for Hillary's opinion on this as well. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that, if you remember, the vote on authorization to go to war in Iraq ended up, it was fairly uncontroversial at a time. Almost everybody voted for it. But then the fact that Hillary voted for it came back to bite her in the ass when she was running in 2008.
That's you know, right.
So this kind of stuff, they have to actually go on the record saying, yes, this is a good idea. No, this is a bad idea. And again, maybe this all fizzles out. We throw a couple cruise missiles and we're done and no one cares in a year. Or maybe it blows up. You know, it's, you never know when you're in this kind of situation. So I want to see all these people on the record. And hopefully by, I have not yet seen prospective vote counts tallying who's on the record as yes, no, and who's still a maybe. But hopefully by next week, we'll see those kinds of tallies coming out. And we'll see what this is looking like, because this is potentially going to affect politics going down the line straight through the next election, at least. And again, if we see a lot of commonality in the votes with this and the Amash Amendment, yeah, these are things that are starting to look like, we're not there yet, but we're starting to look like we may be starting to see a realignment, at least on certain issues, where, okay, we've got this stalemate on Republican, Democrat, on all of these sort of traditional issues, but then we've got these other issues that are slicing through diagonally in a weird way. And those kinds of issues may be the source where there can be, you know, either a realignment of where the parties are, or a basis for some bipartisanship to get some things done on those issues that slice the other way. So, very interesting stuff. I think we're done here, unless you have any last words, Yvonne.
No, we're done. We really are. And I'm, like I said, so I'm going to confirm my prediction on this, okay? Yeah. Which is, it's not going to pass. And Obama's not going to do shit. Because that's actually probably what Obama has figured out he really wants. He wants to just get away from this fucking thing.
And by the way, I alluded this to on Twitter, too. If it plays out that way, I think there will not be very many of Obama's national security top leadership who are still there a year from now. Because it's been reported that it was universal. Everybody in the room wanted to go straight at this without congressional approval, and Obama overrode them all. So if it plays out the way you described, I think you'll see people leaving.
And it may well be, but
not necessarily immediately. There'll be a strategic delay so that it doesn't seem like it's tied directly to it, but you'll see people leaving over the next
year. What? Not a bad thing in my perspective right now. So.
Yep. Okay. We're out of, and I will leave my prediction till next week on whether this thing will pass right now. My gut is that it won't, but I haven't seen enough facts backing that up yet to go out on a limb like you have. But
I hope
you're right. What you describe, I think, is the best possible outcome for this, as far as I'm concerned. And I realize a whole bunch of people will think that is the most worst. The worst possible outcome is what you described, but I think it's the best possible outcome because it starts putting the president back in their proper place.
I agree. All right.
That's it. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Contact me at Twitter @abelsmay or contact Yvonne @IMBo. We love to hear from you. It's been a few weeks. Somebody send us some messages. And of course, you know, hey, leave reviews on iTunes, leave reviews on other podcast sites. Tell your friends. We like more listeners. And in the meantime, have a good week. We'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.